The way you're working is not working. The old school approach of sacrificing your personal life for professional gain has succeeded only in breeding a workplace culture of overwork, disengagement, and burnout. Welcome to the Work Less, Produce More podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Lisa Boulanger, CEO of Conscious Works Consulting and expert in proactive mental health and performance in the workplace. My goal is to teach leaders to consciously build their workplace culture. Whether you're leading five people or 500, the dynamics you set in your workplace matter. We will cover essential skills to live and lead sustainable work, leveraging the latest research on how to work and, maybe even more importantly, learning how to unwork. This podcast will help you work sustainably, lean in and enjoy it with the support of an inspired and fulfilled team. While there's no one answer, each episode I will explore with a guest experts considerations, ideas, and tools you need to create work-life integration that fuels your drive instead of draining your ambition. Today we're talking to Lindsay Dowd. She is founder of Heartbeat for Hire and an executive with over 25 years experience at high-level sales. She and I are going to discuss sales and how the culture of work more, earn more can be really depleting. So how does somebody in a profession that's incentivized the same way that sales is work less and produce more? Let's dive in.
Lindsay, what do you do? What is your entrepreneurship endeavor?
I founded a company called Heartbeat for Hire, and it was founded out of a great necessity for sellers specifically and leaders who are really desiring that positive, rewarding sales culture. And I'm not talking about the prizes and the trips, because that's part of sales. I'm talking about the compassionate leadership, the recognition, the opportunity for people to do their best and to perform. And unfortunately, in sales, you know, they're often relegated to another part of the company, and they're expected because they're on a different comp plan. They don't have the same needs as maybe the other employees in the company. And what I've learned from building my own sales organizations, I've been a seller for 25 years and in various leadership positions, and I know what it feels like when it's good and people perform and the results speak for themselves. And when it's bad, it's really bad. People don't engage. They don't share. They care less about their own success. They care less about their boss and their peers, and they mail it in and it becomes just a job. So my whole mission in life is to help companies realize what this is, how to fix it if it's broken, and to really help people with stories to find the examples of the good stuff, because there's a lot of good stuff out there.
So I have a very personal self-serving question. My husband is in sales and he's brilliant at it. It's his personality. It was what he was born to do. I love watching him. I used to joke around. They're like, what does your husband do? And I'm like, I don't know. He takes a lot of people for beers. He's absolutely brilliant. I find sales such a difficult task. But one thing that I've noticed, and again, just from a selfish perspective, he has such a hard time turning off because of the compensation package and how it's related and clients' needs. So often we very rarely don't take a trip that isn't related to either one of our works. But when we do, the phone's on and clients are being served. Are you seeing this across the board? Is there any recommendations to that? Have you seen this done well?
I had a really wonderful boss tell me once. She says, you know, this company is going to take and take and take until you tell them no. And she taught me the importance of boundaries. And so there were some little mini practices that we put in place, like, Lindsay, you're really responsive. Maybe take a breath before you respond to that email, because you're creating this idea that you are going to respond to everything right away. And that was a good teaching point. I'm like, but I am responsive and I want to be responsive and I want to be viewed that way. But I also realized that if I got to marinate and think about what I was going to say, maybe I'd have an even better response. So taking that breath and kind of creating those boundaries became a real practice for me. And I've also found that when a company has really good culture, and I'll give you a story, just happened yesterday. A woman I'm friendly with on LinkedIn, she just started working for a new company, and 3 days in, she had to go in for emergency surgery. And she basically told the boss, she said, you know, if you want to fire me, I understand, because this wasn't expected and I'm going to be out for a little bit. And he goes, absolutely not. You are part of this team. We are here. We've got your back. You do what you need to do. Take the time that you need. Your work will be here. Don't worry. And I just want you to have that peace of mind. Okay, that's good leadership. And she is going to say, God, this guy supported me when I needed it. I'm going to take a risk for him. I'm going to give him my best. And this is the beauty when you believe in someone. I had a boss once, I had just been promoted into this new leadership role. And she's like, you've got everything you need to make this happen. I've got your back. Now fly. Well, don't you think I felt empowered? I felt excited.
But did you take breaks? So did you take vacation? This is my point, is I completely agree. But in the sales role specifically, it's very hard.
You get burnt out. If you
try to get my husband, so he
can bring him on. Let's talk to him. But honestly, it's discipline. You know, I worked for a company that had unlimited vacation, which at first blush, you're like, ooh, I'm going to vacation my heart out. And then you're like, no, I'm not, because I don't want anyone to think I'm a slacker. So you don't use all the vacation in the world. You take the time as you need it. But with that has to come a leadership team that supports it and doesn't question it and says, you need to take that time. And he needs to ask for it, and he needs to make sure his work is covered, and he needs to have that peace of mind to shut off, because if he doesn't, it's going to eat away at him. He's not going to have any clarity for the rest of his life.
Fair. But because I run my own ship, what I tend to do on vacations often is I'll dip in just for 15 minutes, take a beat. But that's giving that expectation that I'm, to your point, we teach people how we respond. Yep. We actually teach how to communicate with us. So if we're right on it and immediately responding, we're teaching them that that's the way things are and that's what to expect. Where my vacation, while I can't fully let go, it's very limited to that beat, usually in the morning, where it's like, respond, what fires need to be put out.
I'm with you. I'm a solo girl myself, entrepreneur. I'm doing my own thing. So, you know, if I take a vacation, there's nobody working. So I'm
I've really
got to make sure that, you know, I'm not dead to the world. Now,
you can't be like, contact John in accounting and he will sort it out.
I'm John in accounting and I'm married in HR. I'm all of them. I saw a post recently. I came across this out of office and I thought it was brilliant. The out of office was like, I'm on vacation. I'm not going to respond. I hope you're enjoying whatever you're doing. So good luck, or something like that. And everyone was laughing about it, but I'm like, no, it's great. It's establishing a boundary and it gave them people to cover. As a leader, you have to be willing to support your people and you have to say, please take the time. I was all over my team about that. I'm like, you haven't taken vacation in a while. When is your next one? And they're like, oh, I'm glad you asked. I want to take my kids to Disney or whatever. Like, it's wonderful.
It's opening up that door though. It's giving permission and space so when they feel that they can't let go.
That's part of one of the practices I do, Lisa, is asking the question, how can I be the best manager for you? And when you ask that question, you open up this opportunity to build trust. And not only are you going to get wildly different answers across the board from all your people, because they're different ages, they're different tenures, different experience levels, and they need different things. Some people like to role play. Some people just want to check themselves, or they just want an escalation point. Some people want you to work with their clients at a senior level because they need that kind of feedback, but they all need different stuff. And when you ask that question, first of all, they're going to be surprised because not that many people do it. So they're like, wait, you want to know? So they take a minute and they're like, oh, this is cool. And then you've got this ongoing opportunity to learn about each other, to like each other, to relate to each other. And you could be completely different people, but maybe you both like dogs and you talk about dogs. Yeah. Like, it's not that hard to find some common ground with someone. And it makes people enjoy their job more. When you know you've got somebody and something in common, you look forward to the time being spent with them. So taking that time to check in with your people and make sure that they're taking the time they need for their families is so smart. It's a leadership principle that everybody has to embrace, and your husband probably needs to take more vacation.
He definitely does. I'm going to make him listen to this. This is being voluntold to listen to this. That's what he wants. More of my voice in his life.
Should I give him a direct message? What's his name?
Please do. And I think one thing from the like work less, produce more concept and idea when we're talking to leaders is a lot of this is and it shouldn't be, but outside their role. Like there's work they have to do, and then there's like people leading that they have to do. And that tends to be the thing that falls off the plate in these really stressful, like over consuming times. And it's so important for so many reasons, because of course, if your team is functioning at their capacity, if they're leaning in, then you're just simply getting more done. And that is your mandate, that is your role. And so it's a very valuable use of time. But what I'm noticing with leaders, and I know this is something you train in, is they don't have the right questions. They've never been taught to do this. Their leaders never modeled these behaviors to them. They are relearning how to lead, which is so challenging in a hybrid work environment, in a fully remote or back to office with some resistance. So any thoughts on this, on like how we can develop these skills and know the questions to ask our people?
Yeah, I have so many thoughts. I have like seven topics I can cover now. One of the things you just said was when you've got leaders that don't know how to do this, I talk a lot about how leadership has evolved over time. Our language choice has evolved over time. You know, you look at somebody like Richard Branson and you say, he didn't lead the same way 10 years ago that he does now. He didn't use the same tech that he did then and now. Like everything has changed. So why wouldn't your leadership style evolve too? You know, in my mind, a good leader encourages a couple things. One, well, this is my general things. People crave collaboration, community, and purpose. And when you can provide that, and the part you hit on early was, when you have teams that you have to work with, which every organization does, they may not be in your direct reporting line. How are you encouraging your teams to engage with those people? Are you embracing them? Are you making them part of the fold? Are you making sure that your team understands how critical they are to your success? And one way to do that is through recognition. And recognition, you know, people are like, oh, well, I don't have a budget for that. Well, recognition doesn't have to be expensive. No. I mean, this can be, guys, Sally stepped up and let me tell you all the things that she did. Sally, will you tell us what you did on the next call? Oh my God, what? So Sally is excited. She gets to share her experience. Maybe Sally doesn't want to talk on a call. That's okay. You can talk for her, but you can let everybody know what it is she did. And then you create this friendly competition. I want to be recognized. I want to do something good. How's she going to notice me?
Can I enter for 2 seconds? Because I just had an idea that I feel like is relevant to this point. I wish we did this both in work and non-work. And what I mean by that is to be like, Sally just went on a vacation, or Sally fully disengaged, or Sally has this amazing break strategy that she says increases her productivity for the afternoon. I wish that was part of the conversation too, because I think we really systematically need to learn to work and be productive with the hours we have, and then fully unwork. And what does that look like?
So I think we're in the middle of this shift. Like a really massive paradigm shift. That's kind of why I started my company when I did, because I really see this absolute incredible desire for kindness, for compassion, for humanity. Like we were all kind of in our shells during the pandemic, and we've all kind of come out. We're all craving this connection with people. Yeah.
The good part of humanity, really.
Right. Like, right. And Lord knows there's enough bad to go around. So we got to kind of be purposeful with the good. And when you can call out those positive practices and say, I think it's great she took a vacation. And they're like, my boss loves that she took vacation. All right, I'm going to take a vacation.
Noted. Yeah.
It's modeling, right? It's modeling behavior. I really feel like I'm watching, especially on LinkedIn, because it's kind of easy to see just what everyone's talking about. When you see this whole kind of, my boss is like encouraging us to take a break. And I have a friend who is a senior executive at a company, and he's like, we gave our entire team every Friday off in July. And I'm like, that's wonderful. Yes. Now, if they all start tweeting about it or posting about it, it's even better, but this is great. And they had to feel really taken care of by that. So those are easy things to do. And leaders just have to figure out, like, wouldn't you want someone to say it to you?
Yeah, exactly. You know how that feels. If somebody said, or you can imagine. This is an odd question, but I'm just wondering, and again, so selfish from a sales perspective, because I'm an entrepreneur with a small team, sales is certainly on my mandate. It's something that I don't know a lot about. So if we think from a work less, produce more, from a sales approach, is there any quick tips or thoughts on how we do this well and not being overly time consuming to get what we need and want from that experience?
I'm laughing that you think you're not in sales, because every entrepreneur
is in sales. I'm just not. It's also like,
wouldn't call yourself a salesperson.
Well, I see what my husband does, and I just like fascinated by it, because I'm like, I will educate somebody. This is my sales approach. I'll educate somebody on how amazing this stuff is and then let them go. Like, I'm just like, you think about it. You decide, but you let me
know. You want people to sign up to hire you to do things. So you're selling you, you're selling your services all the time. So while it might not look like what he's doing, you're doing the same thing. I really kind of feel like when sellers are at their best, it doesn't feel like work. And I had a woman say to me this week, you know, Lindsay, I teach when you're selling in service of something, it's different than selling a product. I love this concept. So talking to someone and saying like, I really want to understand what's bothering you. Like, what is the worst thing you've got on your plate right now? Yeah. Forget what I sell, but just tell me.
What keeps you up at night? Like
And that's such a, like a typical sales question, but like when you can present yourself with the sincerity of, I really want to understand, because there's probably something we can do together, but let me really understand you.
Right.
It's the same question as, how can I be the best manager for you? How can I be the best seller for you? What do you need?
How can I serve you?
That's it. And when those questions are asked, it's disarming. And people are like, huh, you mean you're not just coming in here with your agenda and you're going to dump this on me and I have to make a decision? Like, you're interested in my success. Okay. That's good. And the best sellers demonstrate that with clarity. And when the deal is done, they're like, damn, I loved working with her, or I loved working with him. I think a lot of people get worried about sales and they think, oh, I'm not a seller and I don't want to be seen that way. And it's so aggressive and cutthroat and hard. And it doesn't have to be when you break it down into service.
And I think a really good point is, people remember how you make them feel. So regardless of the relationship you're building and like how it got there or what have you, it's a, you know, how did you make this person feel? Which again is so much of what you coach and talk about, is that kindness, that empathy, that bringing the humanity back. And that's what the science is saying is effective. It's so interesting because you talked about the shift, and I am seeing half the people I talk to are full into it, learning about it, understanding it, trying to support their leaders to encourage to do the same. And there's half that are still old school model. Be back in office as an example, or like, we hold people's hands too much. And I'm like, why wouldn't you guide them? You're the leader. So it's really interesting, the climate right now, as we explore this. And then again, from the work less, produce more angle, results oriented. You don't have to put in hours. You have to put in strategy and work.
I would so much rather have 5 quality hours of somebody's time where they are getting their stuff done. If they want to go get a pedicure afterwards, what do I care? If the work is being done, brilliant. I'm so happy. I'm so over the whole, like, you be here by 8, be done by 6, or be done by 5. Those days are done. And we saw that with the pandy. And now companies are really being forced to look at their practices. And what is our work from home model? And how elastic are we on it? And do we have to really think about a strategy here? And I think people saw they were so much more productive. And it's not for everybody. I know people that are like, no, can't
go back to office yet. No, for sure. And I used to say, which is funny, I had an office at the university. The university is about an hour and a half from me. And I used to say, I can work from home for 1 or 2 days and then I get weird. And I think I'm on 530 and I'm still here and I'm still working and able to be productive. I think one thing that I had to unlearn, if you will, is the guilt. So we'll use the example of the pedicure. I grew up in academia where if you didn't bleed by the end of the day, it wasn't a good day. Like there was such a notion, and you know, these cultures that if you don't hurt, if you don't feel exhausted, if you don't
feel like burnout, you've is a good thing. Yeah. That's like,
right.
You should be stressed. You should be working to yourself to the bone. No.
like going into the lab, for example, somebody would be like, how are you doing? I'm like, great. And they would be like, ugh. You know, like, how dare you be great?
You must not be working hard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're not suffering, therefore you're not working. So it's been a process of unlearning to be like, actually, no, that isn't success. No. And we define success on whatever it is to us and looking and playing with those notions.
Well, and look at the shift that has thankfully been taken around mental health and the space that we're giving to this now and the recognition of, no, she's not just whining. She's having an issue, like support that. And if someone needs a break, I mean, when I was running a big organization, I had a few people that needed to take a leave of absence. And we treated that with such care, you know, whatever they were going through, you need to give them the space to do what they need to do. So when they come back, they're renewed and refreshed and they feel ready to go and committed to you because you supported them.
Exactly. Because they're either using that break to get back to you or they're using it to look for another job. And you literally get to decide that with how you're treating the whole process.
That's right. I have a slogan and I say it's heartbeats, not headcount. And to me, when you put that humanity back into your workforce, you treat them differently. Everybody's not expendable. You know,
we're not robots, right? Like you are hiring full blown human beings.
That's right.
With wants and needs of their own, which is beautiful. And
we can make magic.
Exactly. Adds that thought diversity. It adds even with keynoting, they're like, oh, they're paying you this for an hour of work. And I'm like, no, they're paying you that for years of experience.
And the research you do before you get there and the time that it takes you to get there and the likely follow-ups and the people that are going to reach out to you.
Or even just the travel time. I just went through a massive delay in travel. So this is why I include it. But I think just being able to be fluid with these thought processes and reimagine what our work could look like in the work that you do for leaders on how to really take care of your people. Because I do think that most leaders, when asked, do you want to take care of your people? They want to, but they may not have the skills to do that.
Well, they may not know how. And like the perfect example I see is especially in sales, when you have this rocking good rep who has a raging good year and they crush their numbers, the company immediately wants to magnify that. So they're like, well, we got to put them in management. It's not always the best choice because this person might really only be interested in their own success. And unless you have someone who delights in the success of others, they're probably not going to be great at it. And they model what they've seen. So if they see, you know, this aggressive, I can make people do things because I have power now. The worst kind of leader you could have. And I've seen this time and time again, where the wrong people get into management and they just keep getting promoted because they manage up really well. And the people above them don't know how toxic it is below them. The employees don't dare vocalize it because they know that they're thought of with respect. So you create this environment where few people can rise up, few people can find their way through because it's just dead ends everywhere you go. It's a tough thing to root out. But when you ask that original question of how can I be the best manager for you, especially if you're a leader who might have been one of those toxic leaders, it's going to change you. Because it's different than everything you've done.
Yes, I think it's one of the most brilliant questions that I've heard in regards to, especially as we all relearn how to manage whatever environment that is now. It's something that can open so many doors. Is there anything else you'd like to mention before we sign off?
It's been a joy. We could go on for hours. We have so much in common. If you want to find me, I'm at heartbeatforhire.com. I'm also on LinkedIn at Lindsay Dowd, on Insta and Facebook at Lindsay Dowd, H4H. But this has been a total joy. And I love chatting with you, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Work Less, Produce More podcast. You can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram to follow my mission of living a 4-day work week, or, well, other versions of it, at Lisa Belanger. Also, look for Conscious Works for more tips on proactive mental health and performance on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. For more information on today's guests and further resources, visit our podcast page on our website at consciousworks.com.